All right. How does this go again? Me. Welcome to the Dyad Presents, a video game music podcast. I'm the Dyad, and this is the Tandy 1000. Bringing us in this time is the track World of Ice from the game Zeliard, composed by Fumihito Kasatani and Nobuyuki Aoshima. I didn't have information on who did the DOS arrangements. So, it's been a while. Let's do some catching up. Let's dish. What's new with me? I have, as of April, started a new job, which has turned my 10-minute commute into an hour-long commute each way. So I have drastically had my free time reduced. On top of that, I have my son back in October. He's actually about to turn one as of this recording. So that has been double the trouble and more demands on my time. Beyond that, I have started being active in the demo scene as of January. I've been doing graphics for demo releases and things like that. So I've had a lot of things going on simultaneously, and as much as I want to, I just haven't had time to sit down and crank out a podcast episode. I shouldn't say I haven't had time. I have had time. I've just been spending that time doing other things. It wasn't as much of a priority as, say, waking up all night with crying babies. Yeah, I'd much rather do that. But I always said that I would be back, and lo and behold, here I am with this history-focused episode on the Tandy 1000 computer system and its music. I also wanted to say thanks a couple of times before getting into this. First to Ed Wilson for helping me out along the line with some Tandy emulation stuff and trying to dig up some of these tracks. And also thank you to anyone who still has their podcast feed up who is actually receiving this. For future episodes, I have a dissertation-style script that is halfway done, so hopefully that will come out in the not-super-duper-distant future, and you can listen to more goofball antics. As I already mentioned a couple of times, this week I am bringing you a brief history of the Tandy 1000 personal computer, and more broadly, the history of the Tandy Corporation itself, or as it eventually merged into, Radio Shack. But before that, let's get back into some music. A double feature from the game 4D Boxing. The only game I'll be playing today that makes use of the DAC sampling, but a little bit more on that later. Composed by the team of Brian Plank, Chris Hadelid, and Michael J. Sukyurka, the tracks we're going to hear are Title Screen, followed by Title One. Tandy Corporation got its start way back in 1918, when Dave Tandy partnered with Norton Hinckley to buy a supply of shoe leather for resale to cobblers and cordwainers in Texas. A cordwainer? Well, a cordwainer is a shoemaker who makes new shoes from new leather. By contrast, according to tradition in Britain, cobblers were restricted to only repairing shoes. Of course, the distinction is no longer universally observed, or maybe even more accurately, universally not observed. And you're just as likely to be met by a blank stare if you're asking for a cordwainer, but I digress. When Tandy's son, Charles, took over the business, he created a couple of retail outlets to sell supplies to leather crafting hobbyists of the type he had run into while serving in the Navy in World War II. The shops were a success and led to more outlets. In 1952, Tandy acquired a failing manufacturing plant in New England. The acquisition established a pattern for all Tandy operations, including its future venture into computing. The only products carried in its stores would be those with house labels on them, either made in Tandy's own plants or made by other firms exclusively for Tandy. By 1961, Tandy had 125 stores. The following year, Charles Tandy came across Radio Shack, a chain of 9 retail stores and a mail order company in the Boston area that catered to ham radio operators. Charles brokered a deal that gave Tandy 85% ownership in Radio Shack after 3 years. At the same time, Tandy turned Radio Shack's $4 million of losses into a profit of $20 million in sales. By then, the Radio Shack stores represented 40% of Tandy's income. Next up, one of my occasional dalliances into demo scene picks. Now that I'm a bona fide senior, I feel like I've got to do everything that I can to represent, right? From the demo Tandy 64, composed by Uktumi, this track is called A Dog in My Doorstep. Nowadays, Radio Shack is nothing more than the taxidermied husk of a once meaningful brand name. It's the electronic retailer's version of Gigantopithecus. You know, Gigantopithecus cleverly comes from the ancient Greek gigas, meaning giant, and pithecos, meaning ape. Yes. The Gigantopithecus, often referred to as the Bigfoot or King Kong ape, it was once the largest species of ape. In fact, fossil records suggest that it was the largest known primate species that ever lived. Standing at nearly 10 feet tall, weighing a dainty 1,200 pounds, the species is now better known for its remarkable inability to adapt. Going extinct roughly 100,000 years ago, the ape was recently the subject of a study published in the scientific journal Quaternary International. German scientists examined the demise of the giant ape and reached the conclusion that the presumably largest ape in geological history died due to its insufficient adaptability. But never mind all that, let's talk about retailers. Radio Shack was founded in Boston in 1921 by brothers Theodore and Milton Deutschman. They serviced the growing ham radio industry as a retail and mail order business supplying and shipping radio equipment and ham radios. And by the way, the name Radio Shack comes from a nautical term referring to the wooden cabinet that was used to protect and store a commercial ship's radio equipment. By the 1940s, Radio Shack was already showing signs of struggle. Even so, the company issued its first catalog in 1939, and by 1947, they had opened the first audio showroom to feature speakers, amplifiers, turntables, and phonograph cartridges. Unfortunately, their niche-targeted business model wasn't enough to keep the company afloat. By 1960, although it operated 9 stores and a mail-order business, Radio Shack was destitute. When it was acquired in 1963 by Tandy Corporation, the deal was for a mere $300,000. Under the guidance of Tandy, Radio Shack became a, quote, mythical place for all things related to electronics, catering not just to the do-it-yourselfers, but to anyone in search of the latest gadgets, end quote. and Radio Shack knew how to take advantage of the latest trends. In the 1970s, the Shack rode the CB radio craze, creating their first monster product hit. At one point, CB radios and accessories represented 30% of its sales, and inflated the company so much so that at one point, it was opening about 3 new stores a day. By the late 70s, the CB craze had died down, and Radio Shack found itself on the cutting edge of the computer revolution. In 1977, Radio Shack introduced the first mass-marketed, fully assembled personal computer. Called the TRS-80, it even came with an operating system built by some nobody named Bill Gates. And for those of you who aren't well-versed in your early PC history, the TRS-80 was unique in that it was a complete pre-assembled system at a time when microcomputers were typically built from scratch from kits. And the TRS-80 was backed by a nationwide retail chain. And all this when computer stores were in their infancy. In fact, Radio Shack initially outsold Apple using the power of their retail channel and their thousands of locations. They even inspired the Tandy Computer Whiz Kids, a comic book featuring a duo of teen calculator enthusiasts that ran from 1982 to 1991. It's nearly a decade of that garbage. They met Superman, for crying out loud. Yes, from their perch at the top of the blossoming personal computer market, Radio Shack and Tandy were poised to take on the world.
They didn't, but it would have been.
Next, a double feature from the game Lemmings. Actually, there are so many versions of Lemmings. I think these actually came from a game called Lemmings Series. First, a track called Tim 1, composed by Brian Johnston, Tim Wright, and Tony Williams. Then, a track called Shadow of the Beast Opening, composed by David Whittaker and arranged by Tim Wright. Thank you. Briefly, because I discussed this already in episode 28, graphics from Shadow of the Beast in the first sequel were featured in two special levels in the original Lemmings game, called A Beast of a Level and A Beast 2 of a Level. The Lemmings levels also include cameo versions of the title music from each version, arranged by Tim Wright. The Tandy version I have labeled as Shadow of the Beast Opening. Getting back to our history lesson, at first, Tandy's biggest rival was Apple. The two played a game of tug-of-war over the personal computer market share, and by 1979, both companies held about 20 to 40%. But Tandy never slashed prices. In fact, they never made any moves that would cut into their profits. So even as they lost their market dominance, their profits were relatively steady. That is until a new kid on the block named IBM entered the fray. I don't want to get too far afield from the general topic, not that I would ever indulge in a tangent. So while there's much more to say about IBM and the MS-DOS standard, I'm simply going to do a quick summary. The IBM PC, introduced in 1981, is considered an enormous advance in computer technology. For starters, it jumped from 8 to 16 bits, and thanks to American programmer Timothy Patterson and a fledgling company called Microsoft, IBM PCs made use of the MS-DOS operating system. By Tandy's own admission, quote, "Our long experience in the marketplace told us there were standards that evolved that needed to be followed. In the 16-bit world, MS-DOS was the standard," unquote. So to recap, you have Tandy losing its market share and not running the operating system that is, quote, the standard. As a result, in 1983, Tandy's share of the market was about half of what it had been at its peak in 1979. And to make matters worse, its profits were leveling off fast. Even so, it wasn't until 2 years after the debut of the IBM PC Tandy finally brought out its first MS-DOS computer. And that computer was the Tandy 2000. Wait, what? Yeah, what is now regarded as a mistake, the Tandy 2000 looked to distinguish itself from similar products by producing a quote-unquote better computer. Aimed at the mid-price market between high-end consumers and low-end businesses, marketing and managing basically deemed this prudent in order to avoid cannibalizing their own product lines. But among the many, many problems with the Tandy 2000 were that half the 100 most popular PC programs were totally incompatible with the 2000. Within 6 months of its introduction, Tandy admitted, "We knew we had made a mistake." How long is this episode anyway? We're almost done. We haven't even talked about that stupid machine the whole thing is premised on. God. While preparing the Tandy 2000 for release in November 1983, Tandy began designing the Tandy 1000, codenamed August. Released in November of 1984, and unlike the 2000 model, The 1000 offered the same functionality as a PC Junior, but with an improved keyboard and better expandability and compatibility. So now let's take a second to sort of look under the hood of the Tandy 1000. As far as the sound hardware, it uses the same sound chip as the Game Gear and the Sega Master System, the SN76489. There's different models in the Tandy. There's something with an NCR, but it's not really different. It's just sort of how it handles noise. The Tandy has three pulse waves and a noise channel. The SMS has three square waves and a noise channel. The three-voice audio protocol was designed to match the PC Junior three-voice. It gave it, as I mentioned, three pulse waves and a noise channel. The first few models of the Tandy 1000 had even used the exact same audio chip as the IBM PC Junior, which was the SN76496, and it accessed it in the same hardware interrupt. But starting with the EX model, the chip was replaced with the NCR8496, which basically cloned the three pulse wave channels perfectly, but had a slightly different noise generator. Eventually, starting with the SL models, Tandy started using the PSS-J3, which had the usual three-voice capabilities, but it also included a built-in DAC, which offered audio and speech synthesis capabilities. As far as games, in general, games weren't made exclusively for the Tandy 1000 because it was based on an ever-growing compatible CPU architecture. Instead, every game that would work on the Tandy 1000 was originally made for MS-DOS, and then made to be compatible with Tandy's graphics and audio hardware. So let's get back into another song before we wrap this bad boy up. Next, from the game The Cycles, composed by Chris Hedelid, this track is called Intro. By 1993, the changing market made it increasingly difficult for the Tandy Corporation to make a profit on its computer line. Tandy sold its computer manufacturing business to AST Computers, and all Tandy computer lines were terminated. Radio Shack stores, once the hallowed halls of Tandy, started selling computers made by other manufacturers. The company tried new concepts with new stores, Computer City to sell computers, Energy Express Plus to sell batteries, Famous Brand Electronics for refurbished electronics, McDuff and Video Concepts for audio and video, and The Incredible Universe, which became the company's Best Buy knockoff. Eventually, looking for its next niche, Radio Shack tried to glom on to the emerging cell phone market. In those days, many customers needed sales help just to figure out how to use the phones, and this was a time before major cell phone carriers had their own retail outlets. So Radio Shack was optimistic. And the optimism wasn't misplaced. Cell-related sales grew until 2011, when they represented 51% of Radio Shack's $4.4 billion in sales. But changes in the cell phone market once again took the legs out from under Radio Shack. Carriers became less dependent on Radio Shack to sell phones and contracts, and most opened their own dedicated retail stores. Cell companies reworked their contracts with Radio Shack, and around 2010, the profitability of cell phones just disappeared. doing anything they could think of to reverse fate. Radio Shack made constant changes to marketing, focus, and management, including the embarrassing rebranding to The Shack. And coming up with my personal favorite slogan, "You've got questions, we've got answers." Which anecdotally must not have been very effective, because while I remember the slogan, I couldn't have told you before doing research for this that it came from Radio Shack. Between 2006 and January of 2016, Radio Shack had 6 different CEOs, including, hilariously, David Edmondson, who resigned in 2006 after admitting that his college degrees were all fake. Finally, on February 5th, 2015, Radio Shack announced that it had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. At this point, the store exists as little more than an intellectual property. It's changed hands a few times, and Radio Shack is, for all intents and purposes, gone. One article that I read aptly states, "Radio Shack could have been Best Buy. It could have been Amazon. It could have become Dell. The paths that Radio Shack could have taken are numerous, but instead of choosing one, it chose them all, walking away from its place as a hobbyist's dream." Before I go, as always, special thanks to Alan Euler, aka Periodical, for mixing and editing the show. You can follow the show at thedietpresents.blogspot.com, where I also post the track list for every show. You can subscribe via your favorite podcatcher, and don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at TheDyad, and you can email me at thedietpresents@gmail.com. There's a Facebook page which I'm not very active on, and you can find it by searching for the name of the podcast or by searching for at TheDyad. And you can always at me at Discord. I'm usually bebopping around different chat rooms over on there. For our outro track this week, we're going to be playing an intro track from the game Budokan, The Martial Spirit, composed by the master Rob Hubbard. Until next time, go forth and groovin'.